Hi, everyone, and welcome back to the Mind Movement Health Podcast. I'm your host, Kate Boyle. And before we dive into this week's episode, if you haven't subscribed to the podcast yet, but you're liking what you hear, then please hit the subscribe button on your podcast app now. If you'd like to leave a review, I read each and every one, and I'd be so grateful if you did that. Okay, now this week on the show, I have a special guest, certified yoga therapist, Pilates instructor, fitness instructor, and author from the boxing ring to the ashram, Deborah Chance. Now, Deborah is on. She is going to share some of her life lessons from a dozen or so gurus from around the world, which are featured in her book. And we're also going to chat about yoga, Ayurveda, you know, finding the best healthy diet for you and just really prioritizing your health and wellness. So I hope you enjoy this conversation. Let's have a listen in. Hi, I'm Kate Boyle, and welcome to the Mind Movement Health Podcast. Each week, I'll be bringing you health information from diet and lifestyle to movement and nutrition. My aim is to bring you bite-sized pieces of information that you can instigate into your everyday life to change your health. Hi, everyone. Welcome back to the podcast. I have a special guest on the show today. Deborah, welcome to the podcast.
Hi there. It's nice to join you.
Well, I'm so happy to have you on today. We're obviously going to dive into a few different topics, but before we do, can you introduce yourself to the listeners?
Well, I'm 66 years old, so I could go on forever. I worked in the corporate marketing field my entire life, and I worked 24/7, crazy, chaotic schedules. At the same time, I was always involved in holistic health. And, you know, I was way back, you know, way back as long as I can remember. I was a little bit of an oddity. You know, when I was pregnant, for example, back then, I was the only person that, you know, said, hey, no cigarette smoking around in the house, or, you know, and I've had healthy diet lifestyle. As far as I can remember, I pretty much stopped drinking, not alcohol. I stopped drinking alcohol when I was about 19, 20 years old working as a bartender. But I stopped drinking, sodas, pop, carbonated beverages before that.
Well, yes, it's something that I don't have any soda, or we call it soft drink here in Australia, in my diet. And I very rarely have any alcohol, just because as I've gotten older, I've realized I just don't feel great after I have it, and I don't really love it. So there's no point really putting it in my diet.
Exactly.
Now, I know that you have a love affair with yoga. Can you share your sort of how you got into yoga and found it, and then how it's kind of shaped your journey through life too?
I think on one hand, it's a common story, and on the other hand, it's not common. The common story is that I had back pain. And I hear that all the time, that people start yoga because of back pain or something else. What's uncommon is that I was maybe 13 years old. I was very young, and especially, I mean, I know I was in high school, so I was very young to have chronic, very bad back pain when I would sit and stand, you know, moving from standing to sitting and vice versa. So my mother took me to one of the best orthopedic surgeons in a large city. And fortunately, he told me that I needed to work on my postural alignment and on strengthening the core. And to me, that's all yoga. And again, that was 50 years ago, and I still do core work daily. And I would say I have no pain sometimes my back will get a little achy, but I know what to do to offset that. So that was really how I got into yoga very early on. And then likewise, I had digestive disorders my entire life. And I went to a gastroenterologist also when I was in high school. And I'm not saying that the gastroenterologist fixed anything for me, but he did let me know that the only thing that I could do would be alter my diet and minimize my stress. And that again, it's something that, you know, he basically said, you know, you're going to have for the rest of your life, so you have to deal with it. And the way that I dealt with it was I found meditation and breath work, which also, of course, is yoga. So yoga, there are 8 branches of yoga, and breath work and meditation are crucial. And that's, again, what I found very early on.
Well, that's really interesting because I definitely can relate to that with my clients. I teach Pilates. Again, has some similarities to yoga. We focus a lot on the core. We focus a lot on the breath. We focus a lot on healthy joint range and movement. But, you know, your story about, you know, the digestive issues, I often get clients in that have digestive issues and they're off to see their gastroenterologist and, you know, have a colonoscopy and all of these things. And, you know, I often say to them, you know, diet, definitely let's look at diet, but let's look at stress. Let's look at what layers you have, you know, on top of you right now. And it's very funny because most of the gastroenterologists don't touch on that. They just look at the digestive system, what you're putting in, what's coming out, you know, what we can see in there. And they don't address that stress part. And it's such a huge part of, you know, affecting our digestion that I love that you've brought it up.
Well, actually, first of all, I want to say I'm also a Pilates instructor. And one of the reasons why I love Pilates is because it helps the core. But in reality, the gastroenterologist did not necessarily tell me about stress management. That was something that I instinctively learned on my own. What he did tell me is he told me to keep a food diary. And I kept a food diary and I didn't really notice anything. However, I do want to mention that I have since written a book. It's called From the Boxing Ring to the Ashram. And one of the chapters takes an Ayurvedic, which is the life science from India, perspective of the gut. And what Ayurveda says is what Hippocrates said. And Ayurveda is 5,000 years old, so much older than Hippocrates. And what Ayurveda says is also what modern medicine now says about the gut microbiome. And basically, the gut is your central, almost like your central nervous system for your entire well-being. It's the engine. And if that gut, if your engine isn't operating, if it's sluggish, or if it goes too fast, or if it, you know, is like the little engine that could, the train, you know, it kind of bursts and, you know, keeps going and chugs along. Any problems you have with digestion are going to affect other parts of your physical and emotional well-being. And I was kind of shocked to see how it would affect your emotional, mental well-being. But I've always known reverse, that the emotions affect the physical side.
Well, we feel that whether or not like we get anxious, you know, we get excited and we feel those butterflies in our stomach, or, you know, if you get like a big adrenaline jump, you know, because you're scared or whatever, you can feel the changes and how it affects your digestion.
Absolutely.
But I think sometimes it's being in tune with that as well.
One of the other things that I wanted to mention too is I lead a lot of therapeutic workshops because I'm actually a yoga therapist. So I'm a certified yoga therapist, which is different from a yoga instructor. Yes, I'm a yoga instructor and Pilates instructor and fitness instructor, but I'm also a yoga therapist. And as a yoga therapist, one of the things that I love doing is I lead therapeutic workshops, and some of them are available online on demand, you know, from anywhere in the world, but a lot of them are in person. And just within the last month, I led a bone health workshop. And one of the things that I talk about in the bone health workshop is issues such as osteoporosis. We all know that weight-bearing exercises are good to help offset or prevent osteoporosis. We also know that diet plays a part, but a lot of people have erroneous ideas because traditionally the Western medical profession has steered us incorrectly as far as diet for osteoporosis. But one thing that I mention in my bone health workshops is that in terms of your digestive health, that has a huge factor in osteoporosis. So as an example, and I'm not going to get the statistics right now, it's probably in my book, but people with celiac disease, they are not able to absorb the nutrients. So it doesn't matter. They could eat the best diet for their bones, but they have a very high percentage of low bone density and hip fractures as a result. So that's a perfect example, maybe an extreme example, but one that I think that people can get about how sometimes it's so closely related, but it doesn't dawn on us.
And there are so many more people now that are suffering from digestive issues, and whether or not it's, you know, an autoimmune condition like celiacs, or, you know, it's just IBS type of style symptoms where it's either constipation or diarrhea or whatever. And I know, speaking to a family member recently, they just don't worry about it very much. Like, they know, you know, that dairy might set them off, and yeah, you know, they're like, yeah, whatever, I'll just deal with it. No, I'm not going to cut that out. You know, that would be inconvenient. So I'll just keep dealing with those symptoms. But like you said, they're not absorbing the nutrients then. So it has a flow-on effect to other areas of our health.
Absolutely. And the latest of my therapeutic workshops that I'm introducing, which will also be available on demand, is called the Yogi Diet. And it also takes the perspective of Ayurveda, as well as modern integrative medical doctors' approach to nutrition and to eating. And again, especially, and I also do another workshop that's all about digestive disorders. And I recognize, because again, I've had the digestive disorders, that I grew up in a region in the United States that was the main things that we consumed because of the agriculture and the economy around us was wheat and dairy. Now, my entire life, of course, you know, I had stomach problems. And when I did the food diary when I was a kid, I don't believe I ever eliminated the dairy or the wheat for a significant length of time. I encourage people to do elimination diets where they, you know, go for about a month without a potential trigger. And then they reintroduce a potential trigger and see what happens. But, you know, if you're going to go one day without dairy, you're not going to notice the difference. And, you know, now I recognize I do not have celiac disease. I was tested for it. So I tested negative, but there are so many people that have food intolerances. And my point of view is there are many reasons why we have food intolerances, but some of it is, and I talk about this in the Yogi Diet Workshop, is the way that our agricultural systems have evolved, especially in the modern worlds where, you know, factory farmed everything, as opposed to in the past, you know, where you grew things yourself, you had your own animals, you milked your cows, everything was fresh. I've lived in other countries. And when I was 16 years old, I lived in Mexico, and they would bring the milk around every day on a truck, non-pasteurized, non-homogenized. In the United States, I believe it's illegal to not pasteurize or homogenize the milk, but for many people, it's much better to go with the natural way that foods are made as opposed to the overprocessing. And so that's a big problem with our diet as well.
I agree. And I know a client said recently that she, you know, usually has an intolerance to gluten and, you know, so steers clear of pasta and bread and things like that. But they went to Italy and she thought, I'm going to try it, you know, here. And she said she had no reaction at all. You know, they were on, you know, one of those day trips to one of the homesteads and they'd made the pasta themselves. And she said it was a completely different experience for her gut. And again, as you were saying, you know, if we strip back that sort of processing and the additives and the preservatives and the chemicals, and we go back to, you know, homemade food with good quality ingredients that, you know, are grown without sprays and all of these types of things, it can be a much different food experience for people.
A friend of mine is actually an expert on, I don't know what you would call it, but about foods and how foods have evolved. And he told me when that, you know, also especially about in Europe, how some countries have really good grains. And people that traditionally have an intolerance can do well with them. And he will buy his wheat there and bring it back, you know, in large sacks. At the same time, I will say that I have seen in Europe, and I'm talking about not only, I spent 2 years in a row working in Italy, and I found wonderful gluten-free options, and there are even gluten-free pizzerias in Italy now. And I found that people are very aware of the reasons to go gluten-free and, of course, celiac disease. But even the first time that I was in Italy, which must have been close to 30 years ago, I remember seeing a lot more gluten-free foods that were available.
I think some places are more switched on, you know, than others. And I think in the bigger countries like Australia and the US and that, there's such a strong food manufacturing, you know, business that's, you know, partly influenced by government and kickbacks and all the rest of it. And, you know, most people visit the supermarket for their food rather than going to the local fruit and veg store and the local baker, you know, a lot of people. So it's a very different style of eating, you know, rather than being able to go to somebody local that's maybe hand produced the food themselves.
And that's one of the things that I talk about in the Yogi Diet Workshops, that it's so important to know your provider, who is making the foods. And even if it's labeled organic, sometimes it's on crops that are owned by huge monopolies, and right next door, they use all their pesticides. And then likewise, at least in the United States, it's very difficult to get the organic label qualification from the government, which means that most of your small mom and pop farmers, even if they are organic growers, they cannot get the organic label. So it's still beneficial to go to your farmers markets and to talk to the growers and to find out, you know, and talk to them. And I know I have. And it's very common that they will say, you know, we don't use any pesticides, but we don't have the organic label.
Yeah. And that's exactly, you know, the farmer's market I go to and where I get my fruit and veg, they're in that exact same boat. They're a small farm, you know, locally, they do grow everything pesticide free, but they said the hoops you've got to jump through, the costs of trying to get that organic label, it's just too, it's one, it's just too hard. And two, it's not worth it for them. They already have their customers. And if you speak to them, you know, they can tell you all about the produce and what they use and all the rest of it. So it's a great, you know, tip for people that if you can visit your local market and ask the, you know, the growers themselves, if they're there, what they're doing and how they're doing it, you're going to get much more information than if you're just trying to go to the supermarket and turn over a packet and find out what's in it and where it was from.
And then the other pet peeve that I have is when food, you know, eating, buying local, because if things are shipped, they're picked way too early and they're just never the same quality. So I mentioned that I've lived in other countries. And so we have some food products in the United States that I just don't want to ever eat them because by the time they get here, they're just, you know, they're picked too green and they just never are good. So of course, whenever you can buy local, that's important. And, you know, in one of the chapters in my book, From the Boxing Ring to the Ashram, I talk about what's called sattvic diet. And a sattvic diet is considered pure from an Ayurvedic standpoint. And it would take way too long to explain what that means. But what I talk about again is the difference between, you know, old MacDonald had a farm versus today. And, you know, when you buy your chicken or your eggs or your milk from the factories, it's absolutely disgusting. And I know because I visited a slaughterhouse when I was 16 years old. And so I have seen what it's like versus I've also seen in Europe. I saw, I can't remember what kind of an animal, but I saw an animal being slaughtered, halal style for, I don't know if it was for Ramadan, but it was very different, you know, cause it was a small farmer who did everything, you know, I'm still against slaughter, but it was a huge difference between a slaughterhouse and a small farmer who does it respectfully and according to different rituals.
Well, you know, also what the animals are eating as well. You know, there's a lot now in the media of whether or not they're being fed grains or corn or grass-fed, you know, really making sure that you, if you can, talk to the grower. And again, at the farmer's market, I get, you know, my meat from with the area region we're in, it's the Gippsland area. So he's got his own farm, you know, he can tell me all about his cattle and all the rest of it. And you know, do you know what I mean? Again, talking to the grower, the backstory, how the animals are raised, are they, you know, really looked after and have, you know, happy lives essentially. And I think that, you know, just affects the, obviously the quality of the meat, the nutrition quality of the meat, and then that has the flow on effect in your body too. So what the cow eats, you know, and then you eating the cow, it's that, you know, whole system and that chain that then affects your health.
Absolutely. And aside from my book, another book that I refer to in my yogi diet workshops is called The Omnivore's Dilemma by Michael Pollan, P-O-L-L-A-N. And he wrote the book a long time ago, but he does an amazing investigative journalism approach to how food is grown. And what he says is that, and again, I'm making up the number, let's just say 90% of the beef in the United States is all corn fed. And because of the conditions, the horrendous conditions in which the cattle are raised, I don't even want to call them raised because they're not raised, but they are also one of the biggest consumer of I believe it's antibiotics in the United States is the cattle industry, because they have to give the cattle so many antibiotics. Or maybe that's the dairy. I'm sorry, that may be the dairy industry. But what Michael Pollan talks about is, again, that corn is not good. Cows are not meant to eat corn at all. And they basically have to kind of be evolved to be able to tolerate the corn. And that's another reason why, you know, they have to give them all sorts of other synthetic drugs so that they can digest the corn as well. And because it causes so many problems. And so that's, again, something that he talks about versus, again, traditionally cows, they're meant to graze and eat the grass, which helps the farmer in many different ways.
Mm. Well, regenerative farming is kind of getting, you know, a bit of a resurge, I would say, and living in an area where we're kind of on that doorstep to that Gippsland area and the farming area, it definitely is nice to, you know, even speak to my clients that are talking about, you know, they've got a farm and they're doing regenerative farming. So I think it's great that that's having a resurgence, but, you know, it's small and it's gradual. It's not probably as big as it should be. But I know quite a few people, you know, they say, this is all great to hear, but, you know, I can't afford to buy organic, or I can't afford to buy free range. And I always say to them, you know, maybe you need to look at, you know, eating smaller portions of your meat, you know, and having more vegetables so you can cut down some costs there, or look at some of those cheaper cuts of meat that you can slow cook. It doesn't have to be, you know, those steaks that are expensive and all the rest of it. And then I always say too, it's about priorities. You know, you can have money to buy alcohol or buy cigarettes or, you know, go out to eat out or whatever. But if you invest that money into the food that you put into your body, you're going to have so much better health. So there is money. It's just finding the way that we want to choose it, essentially.
That's exactly my belief. I've spent a lot of time at ashrams in the United States, in India, and in Italy. And the first ashram that I spent time at, I actually write about that in my book as well. But the first ashram that I was at, my instructor, she was from Austria. And she was telling us again about how where she grew up, where, you know, again, you know, you have your cows and your chickens and everything was so natural. And she said, in terms of the expense of quality food, you know, what better investment of your money is there than buying good food? And what kind of drives me crazy, you were talking about people will spend for alcohol or cigarettes, but I see it's so common for people to spend so much money every single day at Starbucks or at buying junk at the fast food restaurants. Or again, you know, we were talking about soft drinks before. And even if soft drinks are cheap, they're 100% waste of money. And so if you took all of the money that you spend on junk and eliminate that and spend it on nutritious, organic, good choices, it's all about priorities, as you said.
Mm. And it is a lifestyle. You know, it's a lifestyle choice. You have to choose to do it. And it generally means that you will need to do some more food prep and, you know, cook food at home. But that can be a very enjoyable experience and a very connected experience to your family. And I, you know, I've got two girls that are 8 and 10. So, you know, I'm hoping, you know, I know they're growing up seeing, you know, that we're cooking in the kitchen, you know, we will still have foods, like we will make pizza, but I will make the pizza dough and, you know, we'll have our organic ingredients and all the rest of it. So they're getting, I think, a better education around food and nutrition and really nourishing their bodies that I'm hoping that they'll be able to carry on as they grow up into adults and have their own families.
Right, exactly. thing you can do, of course, is to share that with your family.
Yeah. And I think it's a beautiful way, like as far as celebrations go, so many celebrations have some type of food component because it can bring, you know, people together. You know, we can form memories and, you know, around food, even just the smell, re-smelling something, you know, can bring back a memory. So it has such a powerful, you know, source essentially, but, you know, it's what we choose to eat and how it affects us. Hi, everyone. I'm interrupting this podcast to let you know that I have a brand new daily Pilates workout that you can download for free and work out with me. Now, this daily Pilates workout is just 15 minutes. It's going to help you build strength and mobility. It's going to help energize you, leave you feeling really good. And the best bit, it's only going to take 15 minutes. So to grab your free workout, head on over to the podcast show notes and click the daily Pilates workout link. I can't wait to see you on your mat. Now, tell us a little bit more about your book.
Well, my book is called From the Boxing Ring to the Ashram, and the idea behind it was that I have spent my entire life being conscious of health and happiness. And I have traveled a lot. I mentioned that I've lived in other countries and I've also worked in other countries. And I've spent time, I mentioned, in ashrams in different countries and in the United States as well. And through all of my seeking and my travels, I have come across many people who are very important teachers to me, and I call them my gurus. And so there are 12 of them. They're on four continents. And each chapter in my book, there are 12 chapters. Each one is dedicated to one of my gurus and a main teaching from each one. So one of them, for example, was my Ayurvedic teacher in India. And so it's all about Ayurveda. Another one, also from India, is a spiritual leader. And his chapter is about the sattvic diet and lifestyle, which is also no drinking, no smoking, you know, very healthy, pure type of living. Other gurus of mine, one is a Native American elder from the United States, and her chapter is all about connection to nature and to spirituality. And she shares native traditions. Another one is a military rabbi chaplain. And the concept in that chapter is about how all of us, it doesn't matter what religion you are, everyone will benefit from practicing Sabbath. And it can be a secular Sabbath or a digital disconnect, but it is so important because we're never stopping. And so it's extremely healthy for our body, minds, and spirit to practice a secular Sabbath or digital disconnect. And then, as I mentioned, one chapter is, you know, all about the gut health. Another one is about back pain. And several of my gurus are medical practitioners, medical doctors, or Ayurvedic doctors, which is, again, still a professional doctor. Some of them are spiritual leaders, such as the rabbi or the Native American elder, who is also a spiritual leader. So they're people from all different walks of life. And each chapter offers something simple that people can tap into for free for as little as 10 minutes a day to improve their health and happiness. And just as some examples, one of them is sing every day. S-I-N-G. And the other one is laugh and smile, you know, all the time. And there are so many reasons why singing, laughing, and smiling will, again, we talked about how emotions are connected to our physical health. But what I was kind of wowed by was I'm also a laughter yoga coach. And I was kind of wowed that there was a there was research done either in Australia or New Zealand, and it was on laughter that was, you know, organic laughter that was just kind of like automatic laughter versus created laughter. So in laughter yoga, we say, fake it until you make it. So you just start laughing and then ultimately it becomes natural. But what I was shocked is that the studies have proved that simulated laughter actually has an even greater health benefit than natural laughter. Now, with laughter yoga, what we do is we also take some of the concepts of breathing techniques, and we also do a lot of other things that I would consider therapy to, in terms of pantomime or expressing things that, again, to me are very therapeutic, that aside from the laughter. So there are many different components to laughter yoga. So I can definitely understand how that can be more effective than just natural laughing to a comedian.
Mm. Well, I've definitely heard and seen the laughter yoga, you know, clips online and stuff, and I've always been curious about it and how I would feel if I went to a class, because it looks very infectious. Like when you see people starting to laugh and then everybody starts to join in, you can see the joy that starts coming through.
Well, laughter yoga, I want to mention that it is usually free all over the world. It's practiced in, I can't remember how many countries. And the originator of laughter yoga is a medical doctor from Mumbai, India, and his yoga teacher wife. So again, when he created it, he was thinking about healing people in many different ways. And it is very fun. And when I do it, almost all laughter yoga coaches we all follow the same lineage. And what I love doing, of course, I learned it from the medical doctor that created it, is a lot of dance, even song and mime. And as an example, I have one laughter yoga session that is to Mary Poppins.
Oh, yeah.
So it's a Mary Poppins theme. So even things like chim, chim, chimney, and, you know, and you pretend you have an imaginary broom and you're sweeping and dancing and singing. Another one is I do like a belly Bollywood kind of laughter yoga as well. And then another one is to Selena, the Tex-Mex queen of music. And so again, it's a lot of singing and dancing and pantomiming.
Mm, and expression from the sounds of it too.
Yes.
Now, if people are listening in and they're like, this sounds amazing, she's found 12, you know, gurus that she's taken from, and they want to search for something like that in their own life, but they're not really sure, you know, where can they find this wisdom as such, what would you suggest?
Wonderful question. What I tell everybody, of course, is that the best thing, of course, is to wander the world, spend 50 years searching and enjoy your travels and enjoy meeting and learning from everyone. But that can take a lot of time and a lot of money. So the best bet, you know, the best simple option is just to buy my book and you can, you know, kind of, you know, for a nominal price, it's available, of course, digital or soft cover. And you can learn about my gurus. And in my book, I also have links to each of my gurus so that you can learn more from my gurus. And of course, on my website, you can find out a lot more. I have been a health and wellness blogger for about 14 years. And I have written not only for my blog, but for many other outlets as well. And so I have, you know, more than 100 articles that I have written about health and wellness. And that was all stuff that I was doing way before the idea of my book came out, because it's always been something near and dear to me. So even when I was working 24/7 in the corporate world, I was still writing all of those health and wellness blogs.
And I think, you know, people can potentially start in their own area too. You know, if they're listening in and they're like, yep, yoga sounds really interesting and I haven't taken that step to try it, maybe find out what classes are in your area. You can experiment with that, or look online and see, you know, if you run classes online, if you're connecting to this, you know, interview. So I think we live in a world nowadays where if you don't have the money to travel, or you know what I mean, you can connect with people online. There are so many resources either in your local community or online that gives us access to these people all over the world without having to leave our houses.
I have a lot of videos on YouTube as well. I don't have yoga per se videos, but I have yoga therapy videos. And so you can learn a lot about what to do and what is good for you. And so again, you know, that's on YouTube under my name. And then on my website, which is also my name, but on my website, I have a channel or a button called Yoga RX. And I have a lot of different images of postures, mudras, which are hand gestures, and breathing exercises. And so I have the images, I explain how to do it, and then what the benefits of each one is.
Well, I think that's great too, because sometimes it can feel a little bit overwhelming, you know, to step out of your bubble and be like, oh, well, I'm going to try a class. You know, that can be a little bit too much. But if you can just, you know, look up the posture and connect to the breath, that can just be a really easy place to start, because sometimes we just might feel like we just need a really simple step.
And I see all the time, I hear and see people that tell me, oh, they came to yoga because their doctor told them that they should try yoga, but their doctor doesn't tell them what kind of yoga they should do. And I'm also trained in prenatal and postpartum. And again, I'm a yoga therapist, so I deal with everything. But there are many different kinds of yoga. And I take an approach also that, aside from the physical, let's say for prenatal or postpartum, there's also types of yoga that are right for people based on their Ayurvedic constitution. And as an example, I'm just going to make this up. Let's say when I was 12 years old, maybe I needed a certain kind of yoga for my constitution. And then maybe when I got to be 35, I needed something completely different because my constitution changed. And then now at my age, I need something else very different because my constitution is always changing. And that's where a yoga therapist can typically guide you, whereas a yoga instructor would not know usually about that.
Well, that's a really good tip, because I think it's hard to know. Just like you said, there are lots of different types of yogas. I know I did prenatal yoga and that when I was pregnant. But even just looking at the timetable, you know, there's yin yoga, there's restorative yoga, there's, and I'm like, well, I don't know what's good for me. I don't know the difference between them. And that's when I spoke to, you know, the ladies that were running the yoga studio and got more information. But it can seem a bit like, oh my goodness, there's all these choices and I don't know where to start.
That's what I mentioned in my book also, that it's almost like the flavor of the day in terms of yoga styles. Sometimes there are, and every studio will have so many different names for what they do, and it can just be overwhelming. And one of my students this week, I also, as I mentioned, I'm also a fitness instructor, and so I was teaching fitness classes, and she said, I just want to do, she was saying, I'm looking for just regular hatha. And she said, most of the places don't offer Hatha. And I was kind of surprised because Hatha to me is the foundation.
Well, that's a good tip for everybody listening in that might not know, you know, what type of yoga, or, you know, they might see that written somewhere. They can know that that's a good foundational style then.
Exactly.
Now, I always ask my guests, as we're coming towards the end of our interview, that for everybody listening, if you could give one piece of advice that after listening to this podcast that they could go out and instigate straight away, what would it be?
That's a good question. And another one of my workshops is called First Love Yourself. And so what the one tip I would give everyone is find time for self-care. Too often, especially, you know, you have two children and you may have older parents that you also have to check in on and help out. You work too often. And again, I can fess up, you know, how I was when I was younger is I worked around the clock. Of course, my daughter was top priority, but I would take her to the doctor. But I wouldn't go to the doctor for myself because it's not important. And we have to take care of ourselves, and not only, you know, in terms of going to the doctor and things like that, but self-care and treating ourselves with loving kindness. And too often we are too critical of ourselves. You know, how many of us say, you know, I'm too fat, I'm too thin, I'm too whatever, you know, and we have to love ourselves as we are and just embrace who we are and forget about any labels or critiques.
Well, I think that's such great advice. And I think, you know, even if it's just a few minutes a day, as we're saying before, whether or not, you know, you're connecting to your breath, or you're doing a bit of yoga, or you're just sitting and being still, or you're stepping outside and getting into nature, just carving out little chunks of time where it's just you and your mind so that you connect to your body and you can be present, you know, can really be a great step, you know, forward in looking after yourself.
And of course, we cannot really look after others well unless we first take care of ourselves. So we have to be strong and healthy and happy in order to help out our loved ones or be good in the workplace, whatever, wherever we are being pulled in so many directions, like octopuses or octopi. I don't know.
Yeah, well, I definitely agree with that too, because I think, you know, especially as you said, if you have, you know, work and family and commitments, and sometimes it can feel very overwhelming, you know, and you get to the point, or you hear people that get to the point of, you know, burnout essentially, and we can, in a sense, we have control, like we are in control, even though we feel like sometimes we don't have control. So it might be saying no to certain things, opportunities or people, you know, creating those boundaries, prioritizing our self-care. And as we said, our food and our diet, you know, really trying to look at what our priorities are and then committing to those, and things that may not fall into that category. You can say no nicely, but we may need to say no more as well.
And I'm one of those people who has always found it so hard to say no. And that is so important. We need to be able to say no more. But I was also going to say that sometimes what we need to care for ourselves can be as simple, again, 10 minutes a day, because everything in my book is about 10 minutes a day. So it can be when you're in the bathroom, or when you're in the shower, or when you're in your car. You can find times to just do deep breathing, or sing, or laugh, or whatever. And we really can carve out the time when you're cooking, you know, while something is in the oven, or what I've always done, I've been doing this as long as I can remember. When I go to the grocery store, when I'm standing in line, I do some kind of self-care practice when I'm standing in line. Again, whether it's breathing techniques, or sometimes I will actually do physical, you know, stretches, you know, just things that I know that I need to do.
That's me. I'm often standing there doing some calf raises and checking my single leg balance stability and, you know, feeling my weight placement through that foot and all the rest of it. I'm sure people think I'm strange, but, you know, when you are standing there and there's not much going on, it is just a good, you know, few minutes just to check in with your body and see where your weight is at or how you're feeling. And, you know, if you can do a few deep breaths or move your body a little bit, it can just change your mood.
Yeah. Another tip that I love is if you're at the library or at the grocery store, you know, do your squats and check out what's on the lowest shelf and just kind of hang out there, go up and down. And, you know, when you're reaching, whether it's reaching up or reaching low, do it mindfully to work your body well so that you're not straining your back.
Yeah. Being aware of our mobility and trying to maintain that mobility as we age is so important. And again, another area that we can sometimes neglect because we just assume we'll always be able to reach up high and squat down low. But like anything, if we don't do it, we will lose it. So it's something else that we just need to keep doing. You know, don't make it easier and, you know, move things higher, keep them down on that bottom shelf. So you have to keep doing that action and then your body will be able to continue to do it.
One of the other things, another pet peeve, I've got a lot of pet peeves, but one that I talk about in my book too is the couch potato culture and chairs and sofas, soft chairs and soft sofas in particular are horrible for your back. I right now, as we're doing this, I'm sitting on the floor. And when you sit on the floor, you're working your back muscles. And in a lot of Eastern cultures, they squat the entire time they're hanging out. They eat or work squatting. And that is how we are made to do that. But it is so common in, again, advanced modern society that people can no longer squat.
I get that a lot with my clients, and it's such a functional movement that we need to be able to do just in everyday life, that when they can't, they're stuck. You know, they can't put their shoes or their socks on. They can't empty the dishwasher. They can't pick something off the floor. Like, there are so many movements. There's just some functional things that we need to be able to do and continue to do. And I 100% agree that the more that we can move and the less that we can sit, the better that we're going to be.
Exactly.
Now, where can our listeners reach out and connect with you?
The easiest thing is my name, Deborah, D-E-B-O-R-A-H, Charnes, C-H-A-R-N-E-S. That is where you can find me on Instagram, on YouTube, and my website, also deborahcharnes.com.
Amazing. Well, I'll link all of those up in the show notes too, so listeners can head there and check everything out. And I'll link up your book as well, Deborah, too, so people can head there as well. So thank you so much for coming on the podcast today and sharing your wisdom. It's been really lovely talking to you.
Well, it's been such a joy because we have a lot of commonalities.
Yeah. And it's always, you know, hosting a health podcast, I tend to always, you know, we're all in the same space. So it's lovely to have these conversations with like-minded people that share, you know, similar philosophies and ways of life, and in the hope that inspires other people to, you know, adopt and see what can work for them too.
Exactly. And again, whatever changes can be made little by little, you know, just start small and keep going.
Amazing. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening into the podcast. Please hit subscribe to be updated for each time we release a new podcast.